Hello and welcome to Ed Talks, the podcast from King Edward School Birmingham and King Edward's High School for Girls, where I speak to old Eds from the boys and girls school who've gone off to pursue wonderful careers across the globe after leaving King Edward's Crossing Edge Baston Park Road for the very last time. My name is Ben Anderson and I left school in 2006. I went to Warwick University to study theatre, ended up in the radio industry. Long story short, I now run a podcast production company called Sound Rebel, based up in Liverpool. Today I'm joined by someone who, well, school wasn't that much of a distant memory. Anya Duxbury, who left in 2019. I say old Eds around the world. You're not too far, but you are across the water from me here in Liverpool. Because Anya, you are at Queen's Belfast studying anthropology. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I do study in Belfast, but I am actually in America right now.
Okay. And where about in the US are you?
So I'm in Michigan.
And what takes you there?
Yeah. So I did, I paused my degree in Belfast to take a year, a study abroad year, to study business over here. So I'm a semester in and I have one more semester left.
And how is it?
It's insane. It's fantastic and it's insane and ridiculous and so full on, but so worth it. And yeah, it's amazing.
I spoke to Mel Etty a few weeks ago. Mel, who left school a few years before you did, but she's currently studying at Harvard. And she said it's just, you know, you can't, very cool, you know, you're walking through the cold with your coffee cup. Is it a very different culture, US and UK universities?
Yes, it's so different, completely different. And obviously, as an anthropologist, I'm like, the whole time. But it's so different. And it's a lot more like school. The classes are smaller and we all live in dorms with a roommate. And it's like a community feel, which I think is different with a much larger university. The college that I'm at here only has 1,400 students, so it's quite small, which also adds to the difference in culture, I think.
Well, I can't wait to get stuck into that a bit more. I want to ask you more questions about America and studying over there. But let's talk about, before we talk about school, let's talk about anthropology, because it's a word that I think a lot of people have heard. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to dig into just your explanation of what anthropology is. I suppose the dictionary definition is the study of what makes us human, but that's a very broad definition.
Yes.
So
yes.
Anthropology, what is it that you're studying? Well, in Belfast and, of course,
yes,
you're doing business in the US, but what is it your main degree then, anthropology?
So anthropology is everything. It really is just studying people, studying humans, humanity, people. The US divide it up into four different fields. So they have sociocultural, linguistic, evolutionary, and like material culture, which is archaeology, which I think a lot more people know about archaeology than anthropology. But anthropology really is everything, and you can study anything, which is why I love it. You know, I studied the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and then I also studied like the Burning Man festival and how that, what that says about consumption. And there's two sides to anthropology. There's academic anthropology, where it is like theories of people and why people do what they do and why they form groups. But then there's also like applied anthropology, which is what I'm really into, which is when you take anthropology out of the institution and you put it into businesses or NGOs or charities, and it adapts and it changes form slightly, but it's still anthropology. But anthropology is everything.
So what led you there? It's not kind of a, it's not a typical degree that lots of people do after going to
KS
or KEHS.
I think anthropology especially is one of the ones that people don't know about. They hear about it when they're older and they've already had a career and they think, oh my gosh, I would have loved that. That's so interesting. And I just happened to find it pretty early on. So I was going to study history. I originally wanted to be a farmer, and I know there's teachers still at KHS who knew me when I wanted to be a farmer and I was going to study farm management. But then I decided that I was going to do history instead. And then my history teacher kind of said to me, like, just keep your mind open, you know, like make sure you look at every option. And I was at university open day looking at history, and I picked up one of the booklets and I saw that it said anthropology and archaeology. And I was like, okay, what are these things and what is it? And there was this 3D model of a skull, and it was showing all the things that you could learn about a person just from their skull. And I was like, this is fascinating. This is so interesting. So then I researched it a bit more, and it really was like everything fell into place all of the books that I loved when I was younger, all of the hobbies that I've had, everything that I love to do is so anthropological. So it really was like I'd found my calling. And since then, it really is the love of my life. Anthropology truly is the love of my life.
And so will you end up with a BSc or a BA from that degree?
No, so I'll be getting a BA, but yeah. In some places, anthropology is a BSc.
Because I suppose, you know, if it's the study of literally everything, then art, science, philosophy, like it must cover so many different areas. Yes. What did you do for your A-levels, Anya?
So I did history, geography and psychology, which when you think about it, are looking at people just from three different lenses. And anthropology is, you know, anthropology takes a bit from human geography. It takes a bit of social psychology. You know, there's all these elements from my A-levels, which actually I've used again and again in my degree. So they were really useful.
So you're interested in applied anthropology, so kind of looking at businesses, organizations, charities, etc. From an objective anthropologist's viewpoint, what can we learn about King Edward School and King Edward High School as institutions?
Well, see, this is the thing. I went back into school and I did a talk about anthropology, and I said to the students, I said, if you think you might be interested in anthropology, start studying your peers, because as like an anthropologist, a professional anthropologist, you can never get into that environment, because anthropologists do participant observation. So you're always participating with the people that you're studying. And obviously, once you get too old to go to school, you can't study the school anymore. But there's so many things about the culture of KHS and CARES, and, you know, why students are so intelligent, and how do they do that, and how do the teachers help students do that, and what's effective and what's not effective, and, you know, like what changes could you make that might encourage students to do more extracurriculars or do different extracurriculars, or you know, that kind of thing. There's so many elements of school that I wish I'd known that I could study at the time.
And is that what you're hoping to do then, once you've graduated? So you go back to Belfast for one more year, graduate, and then what's the next steps for you after that? What are you hoping for?
So I'm definitely going to do a master's program. I might do a PhD just for the fun of it, you know, but I'm going to do a degree that's going to specialize. So not just anthropology, but potentially kind of economic anthropology, or there's a couple different options. There's economic anthropology, or I could do kind of user design, user research stuff, or business anthropology, which I really enjoy. And that's kind of how I would focus on how different cultures within businesses interact, and how there could be communication issues. And then also within teams, how like engineers might not be talking to the marketing department, but when you get them talking, they have great ideas, and the marketing improves and the engineering improves, and they can feed off each other. And it takes an anthropologist to come in and say, okay, these are little tribes, and this is how you can encourage communication between the tribes, or how you can get people working together and stuff. So I'm hoping to go down that route, but I also want to be this kind of ambassador for anthropology and make sure that everyone knows how valuable anthropology is and how important it is, and stuff. So if I can create a career out of that, I'm going to try.
Honestly, you talking about it now, I'm doing that thing of, oh, I wish I knew what this was when I was applying.
Yeah.
Because I did French history and economics for my A-levels, ended up going to do theatre. But I always think psychology. I wish I'd gone and done psychology. But actually, you talking about it, I wish I'd done anthropology. I mean, I'm in exactly what you're talking about. I'm doing with my business at the moment. We've got a podcast called Over the Influence, which is about giving up alcohol, people who want a lifestyle change, and not, you know, people who are addicted necessarily to alcohol. We do help all, you know, people with all sorts of different relationships.
Yes.
But a lot of it is people who are for the lifestyle change, giving up alcohol so they can go and achieve this, or run that marathon, or actually find time to do that hobby or whatever. And it's amazing because we've created this community, this online community around it. And we didn't quite know what was going to happen, but we really wanted it to be a kind of positive, optimistic place where people don't come on and moan about what they're missing. They come on and celebrate what they're gaining. And it's amazing that that community launched 6 months ago. And we now have to do very little, because the older members, the ones who've been there from the start, are almost training the newer members on this is how it is here. This is the environment.
Mm-hmm.
This is the atmosphere. And if you want to get something from this, this is how you have to behave. And I'm kind of watching it's own little, it's got its own personality now, that
Yeah.
We wanted it to happen, but we didn't quite know how it was going to happen. And it's amazing to just watch this thing organically grow. And it is,
yes,
like you said, tribe is a word that keeps coming up. And people, the members are using that themselves. I've finally mm-hmm. found my tribe. And it's great to
yes.
see that.
And I think people a lot of the time don't expect that. You know, they think in businesses and stuff, they think, okay, we want it to form some sort of group. We want there to be a gel between people. And they don't anticipate how far it can go. Whereas anthropologists kind of can see that sometimes, which is why you need an anthropologist to say, hey, look, this is the best way to do it. And it's going to go through the roof. It's going to be exactly what you want and more than you could ever hope for. Which is why anthropology is fantastic.
Can we go back to King Edward's and KHS and yeah. just apply it to that? Because obviously we've got old Eds listening to this podcast from the Boys and Girls School, also some current mm-hmm. students. That's the kind of common ground for all of us, is those
yes.
hallways, the drive, mm-hmm. Winterbourne, all of those things.
Yes.
I went to see Villa play, and it's the only time I've ever done this, where I went to a corporate box. It was through my old job, got invited to this corporate box, and, you know, a few different people thrown in there from all over Birmingham, or different mm-hmm. industries. I remember I can't remember what we were talking about at the time, but the guy I was talking to, it came up that I went to King Edward's, and he went, oh yeah, I could tell you were King Edward's. I didn't know if it was an insult or not at the time.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, he's kind of said it in a bit of a weird way. I was like, what's that mean?
Is this good or is that bad?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I really liked it there. Is that okay?
Is that allowed?
But he kind of, he knew that about me before I told him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
What's that about? Like, did we come into an institution that has shaped us?
Definitely.
As people, or does the institution attract like-minded people to
yes.
it?
Yes.
What happens there?
So I think it's definitely both. It's this thing of, is it nature or nurture? And it's always both. It's always a combination. So I think KHS and KED, I think they do interact and attract people who are like-minded and smart and intelligent and curious. And I think that gives you a good starting point. But I think that when you're in, and it's an intense environment, when you're in an intense environment with the same group of people for 7 years, you do pick up similar like ideas and outlooks and attitudes and even the way you speak. And so then there is a general trend of people who come from the same group, even if it's someone, you know, 10 years ahead of you who already graduated, because it's a living, breathing thing, the school community, it's always evolving, but there's always some base elements to it that everyone has in common, which is probably what he was picking up on. You know, he probably knew other KES boys or, you know, had people in his circles who he knew that had similar traits or attitudes or something to what you were doing, and he picked up on that. And it's impressive that he identified it, because most of the time people are like, oh, I can see that you have like something that I recognize, but I can't pinpoint it. Although maybe you're just the archetypal KES boy.
Which I don't even know what it is. You know, I suppose
when yeah.
I was there for 7 years, I, you know, loved my time at
yeah.
school. I didn't realize that it played a major, in fact, until I started doing this podcast, really, I didn't realise
yeah.
how much of a major part it had played in my identity.
Definitely.
For years after I'd left. So in terms of kind of the kind of structures then, what are we talking about here? Is it the teaching? Is it the who's at the top of the organisation?
What plays a part in forming this
identity?
Yeah, so I think there's always a debate about this top down, bottom up, where does like the identity come from? And I think the management is important, but I think it is more about the day-to-day teachers. And I think when I know at KHS they hire very specifically to make sure the teachers have the same attitude to teaching the girls and raising the girls with the right attitude. So I think that is one of the systems that keeps KES and KHS kind of alive in the same spirit as hundreds of years before. But I also think it's the girls and the boys themselves. I think that it's their attitudes and willingness to learn and the environment that we're in, the school building and the kind of size of the school as well. I think all of these factors create this melting pot of concepts and ideas and identities and everything. And I think that really like perpetuates the KHS attitude or the KES attitude or the kind of go-getter environment that people need to be in to create the same trends and cultures and traits and stuff.
Okay, so looking at this as an anthropologist, so
yes,
try and, I suppose, you know, you were there for 7 years, so it's might be difficult to
and you'll have to forgive me as well, because I haven't done anthropology for a couple of months now, because I've been studying business.
It's all business, but in terms of kind of objectively, can you identify what the KES and KHS attitude is? We've talked about it before on this podcast, that it's what you're saying about the teachers, then you don't just learn science and maths and English.
No, not at all.
It's almost a belief system, isn't it? And it's a way of living. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not something that I'd really thought about much until I started doing this podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd like to think I've got quite a strong work ethic, for example. Mm-hmm. And that came from school. And it came from the, you know, it's a kind of bit of competition. Of, you know, this place is big and grand and scary and I want to impress, you know, I
and
like this teacher.
Amazing.
It's a bit of keeping up. Yeah, but I think, you know, I definitely looked around at KES and I was very lucky to be there, I think. You know, there was lots of incredibly talented people and a lot of it was me kind of desperately trying to keep up. And I think that's where the work ethic came from too, and kind of, right, okay, I might not be as naturally talented, but I can put
and
in the
I
hours
think,
and keep
I
up
actually
with these guys.
I think a lot of people have that attitude. You know, I think it's the majority of the year group who think, oh my gosh, everyone is fantastic and I need to keep up. And I think the teachers do lean into that because they want you to be hardworking. They don't want you to be naturally smart. Because if you're hardworking, you can apply it to anything and you can adapt and you can change what you're doing. And I think that is part of the attitude, because it is this thing of, everyone here is so smart and I need to work hard to keep up with them. And then it pushes the whole year group up, because everyone is working super hard to keep up and actually everyone is excelling and pushing it even further. So I definitely think that's one of the aspects of the KES and KHS attitude.
But then it's difficult, isn't it? Because where does that balance come, where you don't want to be pushing people to burnout, for example?
No, yes. I think that's why the teachers are so excellent and important, because they can see on an individual basis, you know, where is this student at, and everyone's working hard and everyone's stressed about it, but this student needs this kind of input and this student needs to know that it's not all about work, and they can kind of tailor it. And I think that's key as well to KES and KHS, that they're so good at identifying the individual in it all and treating you as an adult and showing you how to be an adult and how to say, actually, I've done too much work now and I'm going to burn out. You know.
And you, are you 22, 23 years
old? I'm 21.
21? Okay.
Yes.
I got my maths really out then. But you left school in 2019. I suppose we're right at the beginning of 2022.
Yeah.
So 21.
I turn 22 in September.
Have you always been this confident? Because you're obviously you're hugely passionate about your subject, but you're speaking to me now like you've been doing this for 30 years. where does that confidence come from? Is that something that was developed at KHS?
Definitely. I was very, very shy when I was younger, and I went to EHS for primary school, and I was very shy and I got more confident as I went. And I remember my RS teacher in year seven, it was very much like, oh yeah, like I've seen across the year, she's got more confident. And then year on year, as I grew up through KHS, I got more and more confident and chattier and louder and more self-assured as well, I think. And that's definitely from KHS. Definitely.
But isn't that just growing up? Wouldn't that have happened in any environment?
I think it would have happened, but I think it is that individual, you know, and it's not every teacher. You don't bond with every single teacher, but you bond with a couple of the teachers and they say to you, you know, you see them in the corridors and they check in on you and they say, oh, like there's this opportunity, or why don't you go for this? And I think it's a two-way process. I was very, okay, give me more to do. I want to be doing something. What should I do next? But I think the teachers do foster that sense of, okay, well, you're good at this, so here's what you can do with that and here's how you can progress it, which builds confidence because someone's putting this support into you. And I was very lucky. My teachers were so, so supportive of me the whole way through. And I think they could see me unfurling and getting more and more confident. And then obviously I also think that moving to Michigan for a year without knowing a single person here has made me quite confident as well. And I spent 3 weeks doing research in Malta by myself, didn't know anyone on the island. And that also kind of brought in some KHS confidence skills that I just had to go out and do in the real world, which was good.
Hi, I'm Salma.
And I'm Shweb.
We're student fundraisers talking to you about the Assisted Places Fund.
So, I suppose you're wondering, why should you donate to the Assisted Places Fund?
Essentially, we want to help give others the opportunities we were both fortunate enough to have and give them access to our wide-ranging curriculum and ambitious co-curricular programme.
Thank you for listening. And to give, visit the Old Edwardian website.
So, you're thrown into the American college environment.
Yes.
And do you know, are there many other English people there?
There's no other English people at this college.
Okay. So you are the English
Scottish
girl?
Scottish people. I am the English
okay.
girl.
Yeah. I mean, has that changed your identity then? Have you been there long enough to feel as if you are changing as a result of being in a different country?
I think, so there's this thing with globalisation, bringing in the anthropological concepts, of course. There's this thing with globalisation where, as globalization occurs, you know, everyone becomes more and more similar. But there's also this pushback from local cultures where they say our local culture is under threat and we need to preserve it. And I think that's almost happened with me in that I've come over and I've never really thought about so I'm half English, half Irish. I've thought about the identity because obviously that's kind of a juxtaposed identity in some ways anyway. But I hadn't really focused on the English part because I grew up in England and I'm just, you know, half English. But then you come over here and people are asking you about it and they're, you know, making jokes and kind of teasing you about it. And you're like, okay, well, actually, I feel really strongly about these things of my English identity and these things of my Irish identity.
And I am going to call you Bab.
Yeah, exactly. What else am I going to call you? I think it really does force you to look at yourself and think, right, okay, who am I? And how much of that is my English identity and my Irish identity? And how much of that is just who I am so it can adapt to the American environment? But it's very interesting seeing how Americans are different as well.
So what are the kind of things that, what are they teasing you about?
The way I say a bottle of water or aluminium or like the bin, trash can. Like there's all of these like word linguistic differences. But then also I have an American boyfriend now, which is obviously fascinating for me because I can study him the whole time.
And but obviously? Do you say, no, yeah, let's not go out for dinner tonight. I want to sit and study you this evening.
He is fully aware. I'm only dating him to study him. He knows. Yeah. But there's sometimes, like, with the time, I say, you know, I'll say, oh, it's 20 past this or it's quarter to this. And they never say that. They'll always say, oh, it's 4:20 or 3:45. And that's like one of those things that you don't even think about. And so it creates confusion. My roommate will ask me what time it is and I'll be like, oh, it's like 10 to midnight. And she'll be like, can you translate that, please? You know, it's, you know.
Yeah. Do you feel like, does it make you miss England more being over there? Do you like the American culture?
I like the American culture and I would never raise my kids here or live here for a long period of time.
Really?
Because, yeah. So I think it does come down to this culture of looking after each other. And I think America is such an individualistic culture. And so they're so focused on themselves. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. I mean that culturally, the focus is on yourself and your close family and you're a self-made man and the American dream and stuff. Whereas in England, I think we have slightly less individualistic culture. And so we have things like the NHS and, you know, the public rail system and public transport. You know, I miss public transport because you have to drive everywhere here. So it makes me miss England a bit and it makes me miss Belfast a lot, actually. And it's nice because it's shown me that I don't want to live here forever.
If you could take one thing back from the American culture and immediately apply it to British culture, what would that be?
That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. I think, obviously, I'm caught up in the whole university, getting a degree, getting a job, that kind of thing. But I think America, especially American colleges, are very good at, okay, we're going to give you this education and then we're going to help you go out into the real world. You know, the attitude is very much, you're coming to college to prepare you for the next stage in life. Whereas I think the UK culture at university is, oh, I'm going to go study something for 3 years. It's going to be a blast. I'm going to meet a load of new people and then I'll get a job afterwards. So I think that would be fantastic for us if we had that kind of different attitude of university is the next stage of preparing you to go on. And I think it does happen. It does happen. But it's a little bit different here. And I think that would be good for society as a whole.
I know what you mean. I think I was lucky to find the radio studio when I went to university. Mm-hmm. And that's where I suddenly felt at home. And, you know, if I'd not gone to Warwick, then my whole life would have been different. I didn't end up studying or doing the thing that I was studying, but my whole life would have been different. But yeah, I know what you mean. It is more of a kind of, I was being trained not necessarily about kind of this is how you go and get a job in theatre, but very kind of, it was very academic. You know, these are the theories of, and it very much has its place, but I understand what you mean. America's like, more geared towards setting you up practically.
Yes. And I think, you know, there is this, I have a large issue with academia funneling people into tenure and telling them to do PhDs when there's so few positions. But that's one of the options that you get at university. But they also give you all the other options of, if you want to do this job, here's how we can help you do it. And my advisor here is phenomenal. And he's been saying to me, okay, so you want to do a graduate degree, so let's look at funding that you can get, and I can help you get funding. And this is how you should go about getting funding. And you get so much input into your future. You know, I think at the UK universities, it's you're here for 3 years and we're going to help you in those 3 years and we're going to put stuff into you in those 3 years. But once you graduate, you're out in the world and you're an alumni, but you're out in the world. Whereas I think here it's very much like you're here for 4 years. And in those 4 years, we are preparing you for everything that's to come, you know. And I think it is the thing of I got lucky to find anthropology and you got lucky to find the radio. I think here it's less about luck and more about your advisor will give you these opportunities and you have to take them and choose which one you want. But they'll be given to you a little bit more.
Okay. Slightly different question, but on the same theme. Looking around at your peers in America, what do you think you're going to, you know, you said that your confidence developed at KHS.
Yeah.
Can you already see that there's a kind of, I don't know, are you going to come back different to the girl that left Belfast? Are you going to bring something home with you in terms of, you know, another building block to your character?
Definitely. I think, you know, I have family over in upstate New York, but that's a 9-hour drive away. I literally am in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes it gets to me. Sometimes I'm like, I have never met these people before in my life. Who are they? You know, because I've known them for 4 months. And I think that does add an element of kind of independence. I've always been pretty independent, but I think it really does crystallize the kind of independence and confidence and making friends and building networks and stuff, which started at KHS, but has really grown here. And I'm going to come back completely different. And it's going to be a reverse culture shock, but it'll be good.
So we were talking briefly earlier about extracurricular activities are so, not forced, but encouraged.
Yes.
KHS and KES. You've obviously adopted this go and do it principle.
Yes.
You've recently been appointed as the National Vice Ambassador for the UK for the Applied Anthropology Network of Europe. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yes.
Tell me about the organisation.
So it's an organisation that does kind of networking events for anthropologists, practising anthropologists, and kind of information sessions and career development. And it's actually part of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. So there's academic and practising anthropologists who are part of it. And they've just started this ambassador programme where they have national and vice ambassadors for the European countries, but there's also ambassadors from India who are in it. There's an ambassador from the US. And we're basically going to do events in our respective countries to kind of spread the word of applied anthropology. So it's obviously a really good fit for me because that's all I want to do all the time is talk about anthropology. So, yeah.
And how did it come about? Did you apply for it? Were you asked? Were you?
Well, since I got to university, I've been researching anthropological things and trying to learn as much as possible about it. And I found the network through an event they were doing. And one of my lecturers as well said, oh, yeah, like emailed us and said, there's this event if you want to go to it. So I went to this an applied club kind of thing. And it was a talk by an applied anthropologist about where their fieldwork went wrong and then how they overcame those issues. And it was a bit of a workshop. And so that's, I got on the mailing list for that. And they said, okay, we're taking applications for this, these positions, if you want to do them. And I thought, shall I do it? Because it said, obviously the national ambassador had to have a network within academia within the country as well. So I couldn't apply for that because I don't quite have that yet. And the vice ambassador position said that graduate students were welcome. And obviously I was in the second year of my anthropology degree, but I just thought, may as well do it. So then I did it, and then I got the position. So yeah, I kind of fell into it.
So national vice ambassador for the UK, for the Applied Anthropology Network of Europe.
Yes.
But that's not the only extracurricular activity you're doing.
Yes.
What are you doing also, over in America?
Yes. So I am on the member engagement committee for NAPA, which is the National Association for Practicing Anthropologists over here in the States. It's a networking organization and it's specifically for applied anthropologists, but I'm currently somehow found myself at the very center of it all in the recruitment process, trying to get new people joining. But also at the moment we're doing nominations for the governing council of the whole thing, which is fantastic because it's helping my networking skills and I'm really enjoying it. But it is one of those things of how did I end up here? Like, who let me in?
Okay, but how did you end up there then? Was it you making the connections? Was it people asking you? Because that's you know, interesting in terms of, especially for current students who got dream, ambition, passion that they want to follow. You don't just wake up one day and find yourself at the centre of this thing.
I emailed an applied anthropologist. I knew I wanted to do business anthropology, and this was COVID. COVID hit, and I wasn't really doing school because there were no classes. They hadn't figured out online. And so I was like, well, I better do something. And I looked up a load of anthropological consulting firms, and I emailed them all, and I said, hi, I'm really interested. And Elizabeth Briady came back, and she said, oh my gosh, great, here you go, let's have a call. And I developed this like friendship, mentorship kind of thing with her. And she really took me under her wing and she sends me all these opportunities. And she said, hey, here's this committee that I was on, because she's massive in the American Anthropological Association, which I didn't realize at the time, but she's like really key, writes textbooks that are used in universities all over the place, fantastic anthropologist. And she, you know, she emails me and she says, do you want to do this opportunity? And I say yes every single time. And she said, hey, I was on this committee, I can't do it anymore. Do you want to do it? And so I said yes. And then I ended up taking the place of a highly fantastic, fully established anthropologist. But yeah, so I didn't quite fall into it. It did come from my own networking and effort and stuff. But yeah.
You know, your answer then has just reminded me of something that Beth Heaven said a few weeks ago. Beth, I can't remember when she left school. It might have been 2009, so about 10 years before you.
Yeah.
But Beth works for Disney now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a really great job with Disney, one of the biggest companies in the world, the world's best-known brand, Disney.
Yeah.
Beth told me, which you can imagine. But she said it's all about, you know, being in the room and doing the best job you can do. Whatever you're asked to do, just do the best job that you can do at that time. Because you never know who's watching. And you never know what they could lead.
Definitely.
You know, their connections and...
Definitely. I 100% agree. You know, you just so have to do what you can do.
There's a KHS way of thinking, isn't there? It's absolutely true.
Exactly. It's the KHS spirit and attitude, and do the best that you can do because something good will come of it.
Anya, I always ask the same question to everyone that I interview on EdTalks, which is, I'm very interested to hear your answer as an anthropologist. Mm-hmm. But what would you say is the characteristic that has served you best since leaving school? It wasn't that long ago, but a characteristic rather than a qualification certificate, you know, what characteristic would you say? And it can be something that was developed at KHS or not, but in the last few years, what served you best?
I think it has to be the go-getter, of course you can do that, kind of achieving attitude, which I think was definitely developed at KHS. It's that thing of course you can do it, so why wouldn't you apply to do it? You know? And I think it's not seeing the hurdles and the boundaries and the issues that might happen when you apply for something or try and do something. I think it's looking at it as a goal that you can achieve, because of course you can achieve it because you're fantastic. Not to say that I'm fantastic, but I think that it really is that attitude of go for it because you're perfectly qualified and capable of doing it.
And you feel, do you think that would be there for life?
Definitely.
Can something that was instilled, because obviously, you know, you're 3 years out of KHS now, you know, will that stay with you for life? I'm asking you as an anthropologist here.
Yes, I think every institution that you're within affects you. You know, your schooling will always affect you and your job and the work you do is always going to affect you. But I think especially your teenage years, I think you really develop your views on society and people and culture and how to navigate those things. And KES and KHS do such a good job of preparing you to do that. And I think it has a permanent mark on you. I think it really does set you up to carry on and live your life with these basic skills and ideas. And yeah, definitely.
Bro. Anya, it has been a pleasure to speak to you. I found that really interesting. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I had such a lovely time.
Thank you for listening to Ed Talks. I hope that you've enjoyed today's conversation. If you have, it would be great if you could subscribe to this podcast on whatever app you're listening on so you can keep up to date with future episodes. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then we'd really appreciate it if you could leave your feedback in the review section. If you're listening on a platform where you can't leave your comments, then please do email me with your feedback. My email address is ben@soundrebel.co.uk. If you would like to feature on this podcast as a guest, then please email Adelaide Bailey at the Development Office. Her email address is aab@kes.beham.sch.uk. That's aab@kes.beham.sch.uk. She's also the person to email with any news that you think should be featuring in Old Ed's publications, either in print or online. Finally, if you think a podcast would enhance the communications of your business, organisation or charity, then I'd love to talk to you about producing it. My email address again is ben@soundrebel.co.uk. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me again.